going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Today, we're going to be diving into a ton of different questions that you can ask yourself if and when you hit that dreaded weight loss plateau that a lot of people can experience as they're pursuing weight loss and fat loss. Now, this is also applicable to people who are maybe just starting their fat loss journey and haven't seen a ton of progress or the progress they would expect to see given the amount of work that they've put in up until this point. So this doesn't have to be necessarily just pertaining to all the people who have hit a plateau, but I bring up the word plateau because that's where a lot of people might find themselves, whether it's a few weeks into their fat loss phase or maybe a month or 2 months, or they're on their second round. Like, these are just things that I want you to keep in mind that you can kind of just explore and be honest with yourself and just start to figure out if there are, you know, gaps in what you think you're doing versus what you could be doing, or being able to identify some things that you could change or modify or just turn the knobs up on a little bit to continue to see the you know, rate of progressions that you've been hoping to see and get you to your goal eventually. I also don't necessarily want this just to be pertaining just to people looking for fat loss right now, but again, I've said this a handful of times. A lot of the podcasts that I've recorded to start this year already have been centered around fat loss and weight loss, just again, because that's a shared goal between a lot of people at some point in their journey. And I just think that in the season of life that we're in right now, more people can relate to this podcast than people looking to put on weight or intentionally trying to gain weight right now. But a handful of these questions will absolutely pertain to you if you're just existing at maintenance, or you're trying to put on muscle mass, or maybe you're doing some body recomposition and you're not tracking at all. Like, I want this to be productive for anybody listening to this podcast, not just if somebody's trying to lose weight or not. Now, I'm going to break this podcast up into a handful of different sections. First section we're going to talk about is if you are actively tracking and logging your food. These are going to be questions, things that I want you to think about, and also things that, again, we need to be honest with ourselves and just be aware of, you know, as you're tracking your food, and things that could be, they could be a difference maker in your progress and the rate of progress that you see as you're tracking your food and documenting everything that you're eating. But if you are not tracking, we're going to go into another section. Again, that applies to everybody, but people who are not tracking and documenting and logging all of their food, we're going to talk about some things, some questions, some habits, some behaviors, some stuff that, you know, independent of whether you're entering all of your food into a food log for the day, things that you can be thinking about and prioritizing and just asking yourself that can kind of help get you out and keep progressing again at a rate that you'd like to see. And then we're going to kind of talk about some different lifestyle modifications, daily movement. And then we can't forget about sleep, stress, other things that can impact your weight loss, fat loss efforts, general health, well-being, all that good stuff. Now, this podcast episode was inspired by an Instagram post that I posted not too long ago. So I'm kind of piggybacking off of a lot of the things that I typed out in that post. So if you've already read this post, you probably know where we're going to be going with a handful of these questions and the direction that we might go with this podcast episode. But again, a lot of these things that we can elaborate a little bit more on in this free form type of conversation that we get to have here today. So if you are tracking your calories, or if you're tracking your macros, if you're tracking your carbs, your proteins, your fats, your fiber, like if you're documenting your food each day and you are not seeing progress, before you change anything, I want you to see a couple things. What numbers are you tracking to? And are those numbers maybe appropriate for, you know, the fat loss or body recomposition or whatever the primary goal is right now? Sometimes it comes to people get online and they look at, you know, TDEcalculator.com, or they go to Precise Nutrition and they find an algorithm that spits out a number that, again, given their anthropometrics and lifestyle and what the person is reporting as movement throughout the day, maybe these online calculators, if you're not working with a coach, they give you a number that you start out with. Now, maybe somebody starts out with that number and they don't see anything happen, or maybe they don't see any weight loss happen. And maybe the goal is fat loss, but you thought that these predictive equations might give you a number, or maybe they gave you a number on what, you know, what they predicted would help you lose weight at a rate in which you wanted to see that. That does not always happen as easily as it sounds, right? Like there are situations where people can go online, they can plug in a calculator, they can start tracking their food, and they can start seeing weight loss happen instantly. But these algorithms, these online calculators, they should be used as a starting point. They are not an end point. They are not the end all be all when it comes to what your deficit targets are. And a lot of them, again, you know, given the data and what information you put into them, could give you a number that is inaccurate or is not actually going to get you to where you want to be. And so we need to be appreciative of that possibility and that thing possibly happening. And then with that, we need to be more fluid and be willing to make adjustments early on or midway or at the tail end of whatever journey that we're starting. So I don't want people to be married to these numbers. If you're sitting here tracking and maybe you're tracking all three macros and you got a macro split and you know you got a calorie range and you're hitting that consistently every day and you're not seeing a lot happen or you're not seeing the scale move, or maybe it's been difficult to hit the amount of carbs or fats that it's recommending to you, or maybe it's giving you a really high protein target and you know you're eating 1 gram per pound of body weight when maybe you only need to be eating 0.7 or 0.8 grams per pound. Like, there's a lot of modifications that we can make to the numbers themselves that might make it easier to adhere to and might make it more productive and more likely that we see progress over time given your starting point and everything else that we're tracking here along the way. So before we even get started, before I even, you know, start asking some of these questions that, you know, can help you be a little bit more introspective of what's going on in your life and your situation right now, just don't be married to the numbers that you get in the beginning, and don't be afraid to change those depending on what, you know, what data and what types of improvements or lack of improvements that we see once we start doing those things. So when it comes to tracking itself, there is a starting point. There is, you know, numbers, there's things ideally that you're going to be looking for when you are tracking. One of the biggest reasons that people might track their food is so they understand energy balance. They understand how many calories that they should be eating to each day to either maintain their weight, gain weight, lose weight, if we're talking in the context of weight loss here. And so eating to those calorie targets are going to be important. But again, maybe a week or two in, you're not noticing anything, or, you know, maybe you're noticing an increase on the scale. Like, there are situations where maybe you wait a longer than a couple weeks, but if you've been diligently tracking and if you have gotten a starting target range and you don't see anything happening, I would recommend maybe adjusting calories as early as 2 weeks in. You don't need to wait a month or 2 months before you can start making adjustments. Like, you can make adjustments week to week in the beginning, and until we start seeing meaningful progressions, like, maybe we keep experimenting. So I want people to appreciate the fact that, you know, this stuff can change. And even, you know, clients working with me, or if somebody's working with a coach, like, there are modifications and changes that need to be made in the beginning. So we're on the right track and we're kind of learning and using the data as just an opportunity to make educated guesses on where you should be and what modifications we need to make in the beginning. Okay. So that is 100% normal. And I want people to appreciate that sometimes maybe it comes from a modification of the numbers and the targets that you're shooting for. And that could be a good starting point for a lot of people. Now, again, if you are tracking calories or if you're tracking your macros, we've talked about my thoughts on tracking macros, all three macros, which for most people probably isn't super necessary. But for most people, if you're tracking calories, you're tracking the amount of energy you're eating throughout the course of the day. Maybe you're tracking protein, fiber, honorable mention, I think is another good, you know, marker to track throughout the course of the day. But if you're tracking your calories and you are not really seeing meaningful changes and you think your targets and everything else is lined up and appropriate and where it should be, one of the big questions that I want you to ask yourself and that people need to be honest with themselves about is, are they tracking everything that they're eating, right? Or are they actually tracking to document their food consistently or on time? Or are they measuring things, or are they randomly snacking or having bites, licks, and tastes that aren't being accounted for as they're making dinner, as they're, you know, eating their lunch or heating their lunch up, or as they're exposed to different treats and stuff in the office, right? Or as they're feeding their kids and they're eating all the leftovers on the kid's plate that the kid didn't eat. Like, not documenting everything in the food app is another reason why people might not be seeing the progressions that they would like to be seeing, because they're not And again, it's not that people aren't being honest with themselves. It's just maybe they're not accounting for every single thing that they're doing. And that far often, too many times, is one of the culprits of why people might have a discrepancy with, like, hey, theoretically, the numbers look good. We made some adjustments. We're at a calorie range where this realistically should get us in a large enough deficit to see meaningful amount of weight loss. But what's giving, right? Like, nothing is happening and people are reporting that they're eating this. Sometimes it's just underreporting or not reporting everything that they're eating throughout the course of the day. So for those reasons, if this is happening to you, I really, really advise you to be a little bit more curious, be a little bit more aware of what you're doing throughout the course of the way, the course of the day. A great example of this is I have a client, lovely client who I've been working with for, I think, 9 months now. And back in July, one of her primary weight goals, one of her primary goals was to lose weight. Okay. And one thing, and there's a lot of confounding variables here, but I'll get to the point at the end. But one thing we did in the beginning was we started tracking food. We started building awareness. We started building an understanding of what she was doing because she was traveling a lot. And she's kind of the primary caregiver for her mother. And she's also a mother herself. And she, you know, she has grandkids and she's always kind of on the go. A lot of things that we found out in the beginning was eating a lot of meals away from home, a lot of extra liquid calories that were coming in from different coffees or drinks or whatever else that she was consuming as she was on the go. But one of the other things that we found out that wasn't being reported was all the random snacks or random bites, or as she was preparing dinner for her family, how much extra food she was eating unaccounted for that wasn't being measured or documented in the food tracking app that we were looking at. And we estimated, and we kind of did the math one from 1 month to the next when we were a little bit more aware of this, was there was about 200 to 250 calories extra coming in each day from her just kind of mindlessly snacking or grabbing or picking up some of the snacks and the nuts and the things that were just available to her on the countertops. And once we identified that there was a discrepancy with what she was measuring, what she was tracking, what she was documenting versus what she was actually eating, that's when we actually started to see some meaningful weight loss start to happen. And that's when we started to notice some of these big changes in the scale and dropping in inches and just seeing those, you know, those cool progressions that she wanted to see. So it took a level of honesty and awareness of just being a little bit more aware, a little bit more tuned in with what you're doing throughout the course of the day. But again, if you're doing this on your own and, you know, you're not mindful about everything that you might be eating throughout the course of the day, it could be really easy to underreport or just to not acknowledge all the things that you're eating, even though you might be measuring and documenting things to the best of your ability. Okay, cool. Another big thing that I want you to think about are, what do your weekends look like? And what is that compared to your weekdays or whatever your normal work schedule is or school schedule or whatever your majority of the week looks like versus the days that you might have off or the days that you might not be working or have less responsibilities? Are there big differences between those types of days? A lot of times we might identify that there are a handful of things that we are doing on the weekends, whether it be eating away from home more, whether it be eating at different times of the day, which can kind of send our hunger, satiety kind of, you know, signaling through a loop a little bit if we're being really inconsistent from, you know, a handful of days throughout the course of the week to, you know, kind of the days that we have off at the end of the week. You know, are there other types of foods or different types of foods? Are we eating away from home more often when we're not working and we're not part of our normal routine? Are you traveling more? Are you going to your daughter's volleyball, you know, matches and you're eating concession food a little bit more frequently? Like, sometimes being honest with what your weekends look like, and again, this is where like alcohol consumption and other things can kind of come into play here too, other liquid calories and just again, stuff that's off your normal routine. Those 1, 2, 3 days a week that you are being a little bit more quote unquote inconsistent, or maybe you're eating away from home, or, you know, you don't have the same type of food environment as you do, or the same type of meal prep or food ready to go that you're eating throughout the course of the day when you're a little bit more dialed in. those 1 to 3 days can absolutely undo or counteract all of the amazing things that you might be doing from a fat loss or calorie restriction standpoint during the week. And being honest and being a little bit more observant with what your weekends are like and how frequently those happen and what events you have coming up and how frequently those things are happening, like that is how we can get a little bit closer to identifying where extra calories and extra food and extra energy might be coming in throughout the course of the week. So those are things that I want people to be aware of is, hey, what are we doing on the weekends and how is that different, if at all, compared to the weekdays? And again, the quicker and the sooner we can get you to have weekends or, you know, days that reflect more of what your normal kind of traditional days might look like, the quicker we're going to get to where we want to be. Also, this could be good feedback for us because maybe you notice that it's harder to hit your calorie target on, you know, the weekends as, you know, it is during the weekdays. So maybe it's more of a breeze. And this is where sometimes for people looking at what their week looks like and accounting for that or adjusting that and doing some type of calorie cycling, or, you know, maybe they're modifying their calories for the week and they're hitting a little bit lower targets to account for the higher calorie days that they might have coming up or over the weekend. Those things are things that we can make adjustments to and kind of respond to if we see what your schedule is like and if we need to make those adjustments. So those are things that are absolutely an option, not to mention other dieting strategies. You know, maybe somebody who is having a hard time, you know, control their calories on the weekend, like maybe something like an intermittent fasting protocol a couple days a week where they're reducing the amount of time, you know, their eating window throughout the course of the day. Maybe that's something that might be applicable to them in their situation, something that they might lean on that can help, you know, at least in a time where they're pursuing fat loss or even just like maintaining their body weight long term. So you can insert any other type of strategy or other adherence tool or other things that might make it easier for you to get, you know, to a place where you're more adherent with how much you're eating throughout the course of the week. But really honing in on the weekends could be a big difference maker for a lot of people. Some other things I want people to think about are you eating enough protein? Are you getting enough fiber? And I bring those two things up because when we look at we look at a handful of things. If we look at the food that we're eating and the calories that we're getting from our food, and we look at protein and we look at fiber foods, think of plant foods and fruits and vegetables and, you know, whole grains, things like that. Like those are foods that have more nutrients, that are going to be more satiating, that are going to make you a little less hungry, more likely throughout the course of the day. Those are also foods that are going to have a higher thermic effect, meaning the amount of calories that we extract from that food is going to be lower than, say, a carb or a fat source if you're eating that throughout the course of the day or when you're eating that throughout the course of the day. So getting enough protein, getting enough fiber, and having minimum targets for that and being consistent with that could be a big help, okay? It's not everything, but it could be something that if you aren't focusing on, if you're just tracking calories and you're not really mindful of how much protein or how much fiber you're getting, really honing in and looking at that could be a good idea. Also, when it comes to recommendations for both of those things, it's hard to give general recommendations over a podcast because there's a handful of things that we might consider when it comes to starting recommendations. But for most people, 0.7 grams per pound of body weight. Just take your body weight in pounds, multiply it by 0.7, and that will give you a starting protein target. For most people, again, that might change depending on, you know, how much body weight you have to lose or what your current starting weight is, how much lean mass you have, what your goal weight is. Like there's maybe some different directions we could go, but that might be a good starting point if you have no idea on where to start with your protein in general. From a fiber standpoint, most of the time I still lean on the normal recommendations for Americans, which is 25 grams of fiber or more for women throughout the course of the day, adult women, and 35 to 40 or more grams of fiber for men throughout the course of the day, which, as you can imagine, can be pretty damn difficult if you're cutting calories and you're dieting. Like it's just a lot harder to get 30 grams of fiber some days when you're eating, you know, 14, 15, 1600 calories for some people. So in that case, another good recommendation is 15 grams of fiber per every 1,000 calories that you consume. So whatever works for you or whatever you want to kind of look at. If you're, you know, a smaller female is trying to diet and you're eating 1600 calories a day and your fiber goal is set around 20 grams of fiber, like I think that could be a great win. But adding those types of targets on top of what you're shooting for from a calorie standpoint, if you're not already, could be really, really helpful. The biggest thing that I also want to talk about when it comes to measuring and you know, someone is tracking their food and they're looking at their macros for the day is, are you actually weighing those foods out? Are you measuring those foods or are you just eyeballing them? Okay. I think people, when they get into tracking, a lot of times their tendency is to just start tracking the food that they're eating, which is phenomenal. And that's a great starting point. And I think a lot of people can see a lot of progress by just doing that at the end of the day. But when you have no idea what 150 grams of blueberries looks like, you know, and you're just guessing, you're pouring in the blueberries to your smoothie and you're like, I think that's, you know, I think that's a serving size or whatever it's saying. Most people, and I'll be honest, like even myself as a dietitian who's trained into this, like dietitians can be 20 to 30% off of just estimating or guessing food portion sizes and things along those lines as well. So even the trained experts can have a pretty big margin of error sometimes. And the average person who has never tracked food in their life, who has no idea what 4 ounces of chicken breast might look like, like actually weighing and measuring your food for a period of time. Again, this isn't forever thing, but I think that can and is one of the more important things when you're tracking food to just help improve accuracy here. Again, we're not after perfection. Perfection is not the ultimate goal. But when it comes to tracking your food, and when it comes to you losing the first 10 pounds or the next 10 pounds or the final 5 pounds, like knowing how much you're eating, what you're getting, again, if you're tracking and if you're choosing to do that, like that could be the difference maker. Like you actually seeing how much food you're eating, how much you're weighing, what portion of cereal you're weighing, even you weighing out, you have a scoop of protein powder and you realize, oh shit, like 1.5 scoops of this protein powder is actually one serving instead of one scoop, like it says on the bag. Like there are things to be learned when you measure food for the first time. And it's hard to sit here and tell you what that might be because everyone's going to have a different experience with that. But I want you to appreciate the fact that that might be part of the process and that might be a missing link in you getting, again, to where you want to be and getting closer to your fat loss goals or breaking through a plateau where maybe you've been at the same weight for a couple of weeks and you've kind of just been, you know, eyeballing and loosely tracking everything. Like, yeah, maybe that worked for the first, you know, 25 or 50% of the weight loss that you wanted, but to get to the next 25, 50, you know, whatever percent of weight loss, like it's going to take you being a little bit more methodical, more intentional. It's just going to take more of an effort for less of a return over time. And again, it's not that that's not worth it, but it just might take you doing things more intentionally and a little bit more just mindfully as you are progressing down your path and getting closer to where you want to be. So that is, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that I want people to think about when they're tracking their calories and when they're looking at some of these, you know, numbers in their spreadsheet or on their tracking app and they're looking at their daily weights. Like if you can answer all of those questions and, you know, if you're realistically right now, if you're realistically at a calorie range that you think is appropriate and, you know, you're not munching or picking at foods and, you know, you're not accounting for them and, you know, maybe you're, you know, going higher on calorie days on the weekends and maybe you're having, you know, consistent days for 4 or 5 days of the week, but those other 2 days are a little bit off of what you think they might be. You know, maybe you're not getting enough protein in or the same amount of protein you think you might be getting. Same with fiber. Maybe you're underreporting how much fiber you're getting. Maybe you're not always consistently putting things in your food tracking app, or maybe you're not doing it day of or meal of, and you're trying to retroactively track throughout the course of the day. Maybe you're not measuring your food or actually being intentional with how much portion, you know, what portion sizes you're actually looking at. Like check all of these boxes and chances are if you're tracking food and you start to be more, you know, intentional with 1, 2, 3 of those things, you're going to continue to see progress. And, you know, if you're doing all of those things, then maybe it's an actual adjustment of the numbers themselves. But chances are a lot of people, if they can just add 1, 2, or 3 of those things, they're going to continue to see progress happen a lot quicker because those things usually unaccounted for are the things that are getting in the way of you seeing that progression continue to happen. Cool. Now, if you are not tracking calories, if you're not tracking your macros, you're not opening up a food tracking app throughout the course of the day, I think that's great. You know, we got to remember that fat loss, weight loss is absolutely possible with you having to track every single thing that you're doing throughout the course of the day. Now, the calories still count, right? And whether you track them or not, like how much you eat is still going inside your body, and that's going to dictate how much weight you lose or how much weight you maintain or if you're gaining weight over time. So whether you're tracking them or not, your body is tracking them at the end of the day. And that's not to like scare people into tracking or anything. I want people to appreciate the fact that this still is an energy balance equation here. And we have to be mindful that that is still at play, even if we're not looking at the data itself. Okay. Now, when it comes to non-tracking methods, non-food tracking methods that are going to help you lose weight, man, there's a shit ton of them, right? For a lot of people, trying to choose things like more complex carbs or whole grains or more fruits, things with more fiber as your carb sources when you're eating. For a lot of people, maybe doing more meal prep or trying to eat less away from home, right? Or just having a plan throughout the course of the week could be a good first step or a good next step if you haven't been doing that already. Asking yourself the question, am I eating enough fruit and vegetables throughout the course of the day, right? Things with high fiber, things with high nutrients, things that are going to help keep me fuller for longer. For some people, if you're not eating those things, it might be easier to overeat other things or unaccount for other foods. And just tipping that balance by getting a little bit more fibrous, dense foods could be the thing that, again, without tracking fiber, without tracking how many calories you're eating, could just help you eat less over time, okay? Another big question, again, I already alluded to it, but like how often are you eating away from home? And if you can honestly answer that question, if you're eating out more than 2, 3, 4 meals a week, which for a lot of people, like people eat out 3 meals a day, you know, if you stop at Starbucks, go to, you know, the work lunch with friends and then get some, you know, Uber Eats tacos on the way home at night. Like that's the reality for a handful of people and a lot of people in our country as well. But like if you're eating multiple times throughout the course of the week, like that could be the thing that is hindering your progress or accounting for, you know, a ton of extra calories coming in throughout the course of the day that maybe you're not aware of, right? One of the best things and biggest things that I think people might find when they start tracking food is the big discrepancy between like how many calories you get when you are eating most of your meals at home versus how many calories you get when you eat meals away from home and at restaurants. I've said it before, but restaurants do not give a fuck about your calories or your macros or how much oil they're using. Like the only thing restaurants really care about, most restaurants at least, right? A lot of the restaurants that we might be eating at, how good does the food taste and how can we get this customer back in the door and back giving us business in the future? How do they do that? They make their food taste delicious. They add extra sauces and seasonings and butter and cooking oil and offer desserts and, you know, different fun, yummy foods and deep fried foods. Like they are not concerned with how many calories they are giving you. They're just more concerned on whether or not the meal that you're getting is going to be good enough for you to want to get that food again in the future. And again, a lot of that comes at the expense of them adding a ton of extra calories that you wouldn't necessarily get if you made that same meal at home. Like if you went to Trader Joe's or whatever grocery store you go to and you got buns and you got burger, you know, ground turkey meat or salmon patty or, ground beef and you made your own hamburger buns and you got your cheddar cheese and, you know, maybe you got some sauce or condiments or mayo mustard or a burger sauce and, you know, you got lettuce and tomatoes and maybe you went crazy and you got some sweet potato fries on the side and you made a salad. Like if you compare the calories that you made, even though that meal might alone be 800 calories that you made at home, you go get that same burger, the same amount of fries, the same style of meal. You order a salad or whatever as a substitute. You might get 1400 calories for that same meal as you making it at home, right? And that is the big difference here is portion sizes are usually going to be a little bit bigger when we go to restaurants. But again, it's the extra ingredients, condiments, oils, things that they use in addition to make their food taste better for you to like it more, for you to come back again in the future. So long story short, if you are eating multiple meals away from home throughout the course of the week, you are probably getting in more calories than you are think you're getting. And that could be one thing where maybe if you reduce the amount of meals that you get away from home to about half of that, or to not do it at all, or maybe you have one or two meals out a week instead of four or five, like that is something that I think a lot of people are going to find a big return on their investment and something that will move the needle pretty meaningfully in a short period of time. So that is one thing I want people to think about. When we talked about tracking calories and, you know, tracking throughout the course of the week and the discrepancies we might see between weekend eating, the same applies whether you're tracking your food or not. So asking yourself, am I staying consistent even on the weekend? What is my eating pattern looking like on the weekend? Or am I eating similar things or eating away from home? Again, all of these things can kind of play into you consuming more calories than you think over the course of the week. Not to mention, you know, if you're not tracking food and maybe you're getting more liquid calories, you know, coffees, juices, you're drinking alcohol with different mixers, different creamers, liquid calories, sodas, energy drinks, you name it. For a lot of people, getting extra liquid calories in could be, if you're not tracking, something that just sneaks up on you because it's not something that people always think about. So swapping to zero calorie sweeteners or swapping to the zero calorie alternatives for those drinks could be a good idea. And also just drinking more water in general, right? Like another one is like getting enough water. Are you drinking enough water throughout the course of the day? Because if you're fucking dehydrated, like you're not going to be feeling great during your workouts throughout the course of the day. You might misinterpret thirst for hunger. And there's just a lot of things that, you know, might be unintentionally leading you to eat more or not accounting for all the things that, you know, you're doing throughout the course of the day. Last but not least, I want this to be a lesson for everybody, but sometimes, and again, I think there's pros and cons to this, but sometimes when people get bored of the amount of meals that they're eating, whether you're not tracking foods, you just do meal prep and, you know, you have your 90-second quinoa brown rice packets and your rotisserie chicken and you have a veggie of choice and you're doing that for lunch every week for 2 or 3 weeks, like sometimes that shit gets old, you know, like sometimes that gets boring. And I do think that having boring, repetitive meals and things you can rotate through, I think that can be very helpful for a lot of people to an extent, right? It's only a matter of time before some people get so burnt out on the meals that they're actually eating that they end up just turning to a bunch of other things, or maybe they're more likely to binge at the end of the day or at the course of the week because they just have the same boring, same plain, you know, same meal that they've had for week in and week out. And it's not necessarily what they're doing the day, but it's what they're doing outside of that or at the end of the week that might be, again, undoing a lot of the progress that they might be seeing, you know, assuming everything else is dialed in. So if you're somebody sitting here and you're burnt out with the meals that you're eating, or you're eating the same breakfast and the same lunch every single day, like, man, sometimes switching it up, sometimes modifying, sometimes finding other things that you can add to the rotation of a lot of these breakfast, lunch, dinner meals, even snacks throughout the course of the day, like that could be a big difference maker. And I want people to think a little bit more proactively about how they can rotate through different foods, different proteins, different vegetables, different fruits, different starches, different snacks, if they want to incorporate snacks. Like those are things that, again, it doesn't have to be a brand new, fresh 8, you know, step recipe every single meal that you eat throughout the course of the week, but it needs to be something where you're just mixing it up every once in a while. Because show me somebody who eats the same thing for, you know, 1 week to 1 month straight, and I'll probably show you somebody that, you know, come month two or month three, they're doing nothing that reflects that, and they're doing that whole process, you know, multiple times throughout the course of the year and having this constant stop start mentality. So those are a handful of things, you know, among other things that I know I'm missing here, but I find that whether you're tracking or whether you're not tracking, all these things that we've talked about so far could just be good starting points or good places to just point and direct your attention to if you're finding that you're struggling or you're not seeing meaningful progressions and you're just not seeing the shit that you want to see at the end of the day. I think there's a lot of room for improvement and a lot of room for just being honest with ourselves and starting to look at things that maybe we can't see for ourselves. And hopefully you got one or two or three or 10 different ideas from that little, my mouth is dry here, but from that little monologue on things that you could be keeping an eye out for if you've hit a plateau or if you're looking to change things up. Now, really quickly, I want to end on a couple other important things because for a lot of people, man, sometimes nutrition might be good. You know, the numbers might be good, the macros or the calories or how frequently they're, you know, meal prepping throughout the course of the week or reduction in the amount of food and meals that they're eating away from home. Sometimes all of that is great, but I say this gently because to an extent, yes, your diet, you know, can be a good outlet and something that can help you see changes, meaningful changes over time. But if you're not doing that with exercise and if you're super sedentary, it's really difficult to eat around a super sedentary lifestyle. It's not something that's going to be working in your favor if you don't have the activity piece dialed in. So when it comes to a training kind of regimen, when it comes to daily movement, when it comes to the stuff outside of what you're putting inside your body, when it comes to the stuff you're doing with your body in the gym, in a workout class with your dog, you know, like walking, running, doing cardio sessions, your training and your daily movement is going to be a huge part of this equation because this is part of the energy expenditure, right? Part of this equation when we're looking at weight loss. And we just talked about a lot of things that can change how much energy we are consuming, right? The energy in part of this equation, but the energy out part of the equation, the human metabolism, your exercise activity, your non-exercise activity, your basal metabolic rate, the thermic effect of food. When we look at that, you know, intentional activity piece, this is something that can make a difference over time, specifically how sedentary you are. And this is where steps and getting a decent amount of steps throughout the course of the day or increasing the baseline of what you have already is so important for a lot of people, because people might find when they start tracking their daily steps, they might be getting 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 steps a day. And if you can get your steps up 2,000 or 3,000 more from that baseline that you've seen consistently, I find in my practice and with a lot of people that I've worked with that when we drive up the activity, and it's not like we're doing HIIT workouts 7 days a week here, it's right. It's like, how can we find time to get 2,000, 3,000 more steps per day on average throughout the course of the year? That is when you see weight loss and weight maintenance become a hell of a lot easier because you're not as sedentary. But that's also when people feel better. You're getting outside more, you know, there's maybe less aches and pains, you know, that in addition to the strength training, resistance training program that people might be following, it's a good recovery tool. It's good for our cardiovascular system. It's good for our heart. It's good for digestion. Getting steps is so important for so many reasons. And if you're not getting enough of them, it's just going to be hard to do anything without that. So one big question and one thing I want you to ask yourself is, are you staying active throughout the course of the day at all? How many steps are you averaging throughout the course of the day or throughout the course of the week? Because sure, people might have, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 steps on their really busy work days, but they might get 12,000 to 15,000 steps on the weekend because they go on a hike and a long walk. Like that is absolutely okay. But how many steps are you averaging throughout the course of the week? If it is less than 7,000 steps per day on average throughout the course of the week, getting to that 7,000 step mark is a worthwhile pursuit for almost everybody when feasible. If even you're finding you're in that 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 range, man, maybe that person might benefit from getting to 9,000 or 10,000. I think the generic 10,000 steps per day is a good range. I think that's a good target for a lot of people to shoot for, but it's not practical and it's not necessary. It's not necessary for everybody when it comes to their lifestyle and everything else that they have going on in their life. So for me, lowering the bar a little bit, getting that 7,000, we're going to see a lot of the health benefits that we would get from getting an adequate amount of steps in every day by that 7,000, 8,000 mark. Getting up to 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, I think could be a worthwhile pursuit once you get to that point too. But if you're not there already, get there. And that is a question that I think a lot of people, again, if they could be honest with themselves, you know, and again, maybe they're averaging 7,000 throughout the course of the week, but some days they're having 5,000 steps a day or 6,000 steps a day. It's like, cool, maybe get those days up to that 7,000 range. And that's how we're going to see this average go up over time. But when it comes to daily activity, steps are so underrated and I just don't want people to sleep on that. So ask yourself those questions. And if there's modifications or if you can get a walking pad or if you can carve out time to take your dog for an extra walk in the morning, you guys as a family bundle up at the end of the day and go on a walk after dinner, or you park farther away from the grocery store, or instead of getting Instacart, like you actually go to the grocery store, right? Like there's so many ways I think we can sneak a little bit more steps in throughout the course of the day. But I want that to be something that people appreciate because it is something that is going to help and be kind of the, you know, gas to the fire here when we're looking at fat loss. Last few questions here from a training standpoint is, are you training enough? You know, maybe somebody's sitting here doing two exercise classes a week or 1 to 2 lifts a week. Cool. Maybe 2 could be a good minimum effective dose, or maybe that's better than what you're doing before. But maybe there's a conversation to be had about increasing training volume and frequency. And maybe you getting to 3 days a week is more practical, or not more practical. Maybe it's more, more necessary, again, to see the body composition and weight loss transformation that we want to see. Maybe it looks like, hey, I'm lifting 2 days a week. Maybe I want to add an extra cardio session in. Maybe it looks like, how can I add some recreational sports to this? Like, how can I add, you know, some time in after a lift to get on the Stairmaster or, you know, the stationary bike, or maybe use the Peloton or the Nordic Track bike that you bought in COVID that has been collecting dust all these years. Like, how can you start to use that, incorporate that a little bit more? Sometimes getting up to at least 2, 3, 4 days a week of some type of intentional activity outside of how many steps you're getting each day, very, very beneficial. On the other side, sometimes people might be training too much. Like, you might be the person sitting here doing 6 orange classes a week, and maybe that's too much. Like, maybe you're not getting enough rest and recovery days in. Maybe you're going into these workout classes unmotivated, or not actually getting a good stimulus or getting a good workout because you have a bunch of lingering soreness going into that workout class, right? Like, maybe reducing the amount of, the amount of days and the frequency in which you work out could also be a benefit too. So a lot of questions to ask yourself from a training standpoint that might help over time, but I really, really want you guys to hone in on the steps. And most people out here are not overtraining. Like, most Americans aren't having an overtraining problem. So I think getting more steps in throughout the course of the day could be a worthwhile pursuit for a lot of people if they aren't doing that already. Last but not least, I got to wrap it up here in a couple minutes because I have a call coming up, but I want to touch on people's stress and people's sleep, because these are arguably some of the big rocks to outside of training, outside of nutrition, outside of macros, outside of fiber, outside of, you know, how many steps you're getting throughout the course of the day. Like, are you sleeping and are you stressed the fuck out? Like, sometimes people can find themselves in a sleep deprived state or a highly stressful state at work. There's just a lot of external stimulus stressing people out that could be masking how much weight loss you've actually lost, right? Like, maybe you have some of these, you know, quote unquote cortisol spikes and you're not sleeping as much and you have more water fluctuation. And maybe for my ladies out there, it's that time of the month. And, you know, you see some weight, jumps up on the scale because of that. Like, there's a lot of stress that people are dealing with day to day, and stress could mask, you know, true weight loss that's happening, or could make it harder for you to actually see meaningful progress on the scale as well, if fat loss is your goal. So sometimes just being honest with yourself and you know, objectively just kind of looking at what's going on and what stressors you're dealing with and how that's impacting you and, you know, how you're dealing with that or what you're choosing to do, you know, around that or because of that, or how that's impacting your sleep and wake cycle. Like, those are all things that are super underrated that I think not a lot of people appreciate how important those things are. Now, questions to ask yourself could be, am I more stressed, you know, this week than I am, you know, this time every other week? Or is this a more stressful part of the month or the week compared to other normal times of the week? Like, are you, in addition to that, are you practicing different stress management practices, or are you just letting the stress kind of accumulate? Are you going to bed later than usual? Are you drinking alcohol in response to this? Are you screen sucking and watching, you know, YouTube videos or Netflix shows or whatever it is at the end of the night to just try and take your mind off of things, but it's causing you to sit for 3 hours right after you eat and, you know, your mind is stimulated before you go to bed? Like, there are things that we can do to just kind of ask, what's happening? What are we doing about it? And how is that impacting us? And for a lot of people, you might find that, yeah, maybe you don't have insanely, you know, horrible, like, stress management coping mechanisms, but maybe they could be even more productive. When it comes to sleep, right? Like, asking, what are we doing before bed? What are we doing first thing in the morning? Are we looking at screens super late at night? Are we watching, you know, shows before bed? Are we online shopping? Are we looking at work emails? Are we responding to texts? Are we talking on the phone? Like a lot of things that we do on our phone and the screens that we have, like they're very dopamine seeking behaviors. And those are things that could make it harder for us to fall asleep, just worsen our sleep latency, like how quickly we fall asleep when our head hits the pillow. And even our ability to kind of get into those deep and restful kind of REM sleep cycles and, you know, getting up in the middle of the night, like you being more stimulated and overly stimulated before going to bed and overly stressed is probably going to disrupt your sleep and make it more difficult for you to get restful sleep and feel good the next morning. And we know that, you know, not getting enough sleep domino effects into so many other things and can impact so much from a recovery, from a food decision, from a mood, from an energy, from, you know, just like a decision making, from, you know, like you having the inclination to get up and move, or to you making more health promoting decisions. Like people who are sleep deprived, I am not betting on them to be, you know, more adherent over time if they're chronically sleep deprived compared to somebody who might be getting actual 7-8 plus hours a night and who are prioritizing that. Like you compare those two people together, like there's a good chance and a very high likelihood that that person getting more sleep is going to do everything better than that person getting less sleep over time. It's not to say that it's impossible. And again, I know all my parents and, you know, parents of newborns or, you know, parents with kids and, you know, my nocturnal, you know, night shift workers and shift workers in general kind of laughing at me here. Again, it's just, what can we do that's making the best of your situation? That's part of this discussion here. But for a lot of you people, or for a lot of you guys out there, it's like getting in a good sleep wake routine, like that is going to be one of the biggest difference makers when it comes to getting out of fat loss plateau, putting on more muscle, maintaining your body weight, having successful body recomp, making good decisions throughout the course of the day. Those are all things that if those aren't in check, everything else is just going to be indirectly harder because of that. So I bring up the stress part of this equation because sometimes you can have everything else that we talked about dialed into a T, done perfectly, but if you're getting 5 hours of sleep every night, that is going to change things like nutrient partitioning and fat storage. And again, like your ability to make good decisions over time and your ability to recover and adapt to the training stimulus and all the things that we're doing from an activity standpoint. It's like getting enough sleep, managing your stress. It's vague and we've had episodes and talked about this before, but they are worth your while and they're usually the most neglected things when it comes to improving your health and well-being. And once people can identify that and get to the root cause of that and to make meaningful changes to those things, watch out, because you're going to start seeing some cool shit start to happen pretty damn quickly if you haven't already. So make those a priority, just like with everything else. But I want to end this podcast on the note that like, there's a lot of things that you could do. Maybe you are aware of all these things or maybe you're not, but there's a lot of modifications and things to be honest with ourselves about that can and will help us make good progressions, make good progress over time, and kind of leaning back and not stressing out, not being, you know, shameful, not beating ourselves up and feeling guilty for not having succeeded as, you know, quickly as we'd like to be. And instead just being kind to yourself, being honest, being more objective and starting to identify the things that, you know, maybe there's just a gap in what I think I'm doing versus what I'm actually doing. When you can start to, you know, intentionally go after those things and, you know, bridge that gap, like that's when you see this shit start to accelerate and you see this stuff become a hell of a lot easier in your health and fitness pursuits going forward. So hopefully you took away a few of those things. Hopefully this message and this podcast finds you at a time where this might be applicable for you, or come back in the future and listen to this if you find yourself in a position where you're stressed and frustrated and confused on why things might not be progressing at a rate you'd like them, you know, you'd like them to be or like to see them. And we can kind of keep going from there and ideally get you to the place you want to be a hell of a lot quicker instead of you just trying to spin your wheels all the time. So if you made it to the end of this podcast episode, I appreciate you as always. Until next time, remember to eat with a purpose, train with attention, think with confidence as you work towards your own nutrition and fitness goals. See you on the next episode and we will talk soon, okay? Peace. Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, It would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.